Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Community Perspectives episode with Alexandra Benowith, Stephen Burns, Kira McNair, Ronald Reeves, and Kristen Walden. I'm one of your hosts, Marla.
And I'm your other, David. In today's episode, we have an expert panel discussing the topic, The Time Is Now, Expert Consensus, Best Practices, and Future Directions for Classifying and Tracking Outcomes for Individuals with Non-Traumatic Spinal Cord Injury. The episode today is sponsored by the American Spinal Injury Association's Education Committee. So for our panel, kicking us off, for Dr. Reeves or Dr. Burns, can you introduce our listeners to what non-traumatic, that key word we're going to be discussing today, non-traumatic spinal cord injury is and the difference between that and a traumatic spinal cord injury?
I'll go ahead and start. So the diseases of the spinal cord, so the major bundle of nerves from the brain to the body, could involve a variety of different things. Pressure from a disc, arthritis, a disease inside the spinal cord, such as inflammation or a circulation problem, blood vessel malformation. Any of those conditions that affect the spinal cord would fall under the large umbrella of non-traumatic spinal cord injury. Many of these are more slow and gradual in onset, but nonetheless result in the same kinds of problems, sometimes perhaps in less severity, as a traumatic injury where someone might dive and break their neck or have a car accident and a sudden fracture dislocation.
Dr. Burns, anything you want to add there?
Because the range of conditions is so great, it also means that the initial diagnosis of it and understanding what condition is going on can be a bit delayed too, in comparison to a traumatic injury where it's quite obvious what happened with a broken bone that occurred right after the car crash. So in by comparison, it's a much wider range of conditions that can cause a non-traumatic SCI.
And that's a great point, is we do know that in many cases, people do have to search to get a diagnosis. Sometimes it's not immediately apparent what's going on. And over time, the symptoms evolve until ultimately they are referred. A person might be referred to a subspecialty center. That doesn't necessarily mean the local team that was starting the process did anything wrong. Oftentimes the symptoms aren't clear enough at the start, and it's only with time that then at a large academic medical center it becomes clear what is going on, and then the definitive treatment can be offered.
And I think with the traumatic causes of a spinal cord injury being more obvious, there's been more historical focus on it, and as we all know, there's maybe a bit of a shift coming there. So can we set a little bit of the stage with why non-traumatic is so such a relevant topic right now?
Sure. I think that's my time to jump in. This is Alex Benowith. Thank you to Asia for hosting this podcast. Yes, with the non-traumatic spinal cord injury population, some of the challenges that we see are, as we are aware, the population with NT is generally a little bit older, and very difficult for these folks to find good information, trusted information about where they're supposed to go in the first place for appropriate care. Unfortunately, there are a lot of facilities out there that have the word rehabilitation in their title, and unfortunately they do not have any expertise in the SCI space. Just collating the information, finding the right place to go, knowing what questions to ask about what specialists need to be there at any facility that they go to is really critical. We all know the problems with insurance, and that's a huge barrier to many. And once people are in certain facilities, that aren't appropriate, it's very difficult to get transferred to the correct one. We do a lot of individual support of various cases on that one issue that takes up a lot of time. And we know those are where we have specific experience on those issues about how difficult it is for the NTSI population. So we did collate a resource with the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center to focus on information about how to identify a rehab facility with the appropriate expertise. And that's co-branded with United Spinal. So I know that Asia also has a great lot of resources for this community. So I really encourage listeners to take a look at all of those that are out there.
I think that's such a great point about, you know, people finding the right location for them when they have these diagnoses. And then even having, if you go to, you know, what could be quote unquote, not the most appropriate location, that has long-term effects. You know, the resources that they're getting offered when they're in these facilities, what resources they become aware of when once they're out into the community, because, you know, they may even just Google like spinal cord injury, traumatic spinal cord injury, and, you know, United Spinal might not pop up for them, or they might not even be aware that it's a thing. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, the long-term ramifications of the non-traumatic SCI population?
I would say, yeah, absolutely. It really starts at the trauma center. It's the whole journey. If they come into the space at the wrong point, they're already at a disadvantage. And the longer that time goes, the harder it is. Because we all know the quicker you can get preventative care or rehabilitative care and continue that care appropriately, the better chances, the better outcomes there are. So that is the biggest problem with NTSI. They may not be connected to the right community supports. They might not have the appropriate discharge plan. They might not know what that is. They might not have enough PT, OT once they leave the facility. That is a huge issue as well. And we all know rehab outcomes do fall precipitously once people do go back into the community. So it's really a race. It's a race to find people and to get them in the system early enough at the right time in the right place. But similarly, the information that we give to people really needs to be curated and provided to them at the right time along their journey, because you had a huge binder to somebody when they've experienced something really traumatic, literally traumatic. They're not really going to be able to process that. So the experts in the field at all aspects of the journey should be aware of that. And this will help with rehab outcomes improvements and hopefully counter readmissions, which we don't want either. And, we are, United Spinal is looking more closely at the denial data and the readmission data to see what we can do as United Spinal to help, you know, lower those numbers.
Indeed, physical trauma can be psychologically traumatizing, as well as a non-traumatic spinal cord injury can carry that. And oftentimes the difference between psychological trauma and the PTSD gap is making sense of that trauma. And if you're provided access to the right medical resources, you will. And so maybe, Kara, you can talk to us a little bit about accessing support in the community and making sense of non-traumatic spinal cord injury, you know, before leading into the diagnosis, and then maybe bridging that into participation in clinical trials, which is the way that we develop these types of resources.
Yeah, so I think what's interesting is talking about not having access to, you know, lack of referrals to places like Model System Centers for people with non-traumatic spinal cord injury compared to traumatic, right? If you have a traumatic spinal cord injury, you may have gotten airlifted from one local hospital to the trauma center. The trauma center is more likely to be hooked up with their closer model system center, and it's easier to kind of Google and find out where are these centers for someone with this acute traumatic spinal cord injury. Whereas a non-traumatic spinal cord injury, you're going to be at your general hospital system quite often, right? If you have a acute onset of a presentation of a tumor in your spine or an infarct in your spine, you're less likely to be transferred to some of those trauma centers that even know what a model system looks like, right? So even starting off, it's a lot harder to get that access. But then even if you're being referred to a model system center, one of the pieces that we've been talking about within our Asia Education Committee group is the education we provide to our patients, even at some of the best systems in the country, in the world, are based on data from traumatic spinal cord injury populations. So we aren't necessarily even at these great centers able to tailor that education and information to our patients based on their clinical presentation. So we are usually have to kind of take it with a grain of salt and adjust how we're presenting this information. Okay, I have this great fact sheet on neurogenic bowel and bladder, but is your bladder presenting as a typical upper motor neuron bladder? Or are you kind of someone who may present with both upper and lower motor neuron symptoms, right? So all of those pieces are something that we've been considering as a group of what does that look like now moving forward? And that leads to that idea that all of the data we have and the way that they've developed this education is based on longitudinal research for years and years and decades of specifically traumatic spinal cord injury. So our group and a lot of our kind of international leaders are pushing, we need to start tracking more of what non-traumatic spinal cord injury looks like so that we can tailor that education to our end users and the people who actually need it more than anything else. And with that, hopefully people are now recruiting more of our non-traumatic spinal cord injury population into some clinical trials. And some of our friends within the model systems are now considering and starting to collect data on our non-traumatic spinal cord injury patients as well. So hopefully, as we move forward, we'll have more information that can even inform us as clinicians on how we can better educate our patients.
And thus the time is now. Sorry, Alex, go ahead.
Thank you, David. I did want to chime in, Kira, on that point. So thank you. And I'll stop after this, but I did want to get this point in about the capacity that the model systems are facing with the additional collection needs of NTSI. And I know in the scholarly section of this podcast, you'll be going into that into more detail. But talking about the funding levels of the model systems that are out there really have remained stagnant for the last 20 or so years. Up until very recently, we did take it upon ourselves to lead some efforts to increase funding at the model systems so that there's at least $2 million extra. And we have been pushing continuously for additional funding per center. You were all originally 14 and now you are up to 18. So we got the UAB, Michigan, Texas, and Massachusetts centers added back in, which was well needed for our population. But if you think about it, that's still only 18 out of 50 states and 200,000 back when, you know, back in the early 2000s, the population of SCI was 200,000. It's now over 300,000. And coming down from NIBLR, the request to collect NTSI data, it's more difficult. And with a higher population and more data that needs to be collected, something's going to give. So we definitely appreciate all the work that model systems do. And we definitely want to continue to push. And we do advocate for increased funding so that you can do your jobs. That was my little plug for you guys.
The time is now.
So far in this very uplifting episode, we've talked about how we don't send people with non-traumatic SCI to the correct rehabilitation centers. Often we don't have great support for these individuals after they leave their rehabilitation education we provide doesn't necessarily have most robust data. And we have to work on the funding that we are receiving at the model systems episode, model systems hospitals. So I think now we get to the meat of why this is all so important and why we need to start classifying non-traumatic SCI separately from traumatic SCI so we can start improving all of these aspects of our care. And so I think it'd be reasonable to jump into maybe some history of the differences of classification of non-traumatic SCI and how it's being classified now and why this is sort of the topic that we're talking about. So I know I think I cut you off, Dr. Reeves, but Dr. Reeves and Dr. Burns, would you mind jumping in and talking to us a little bit about that?
Sure. I can talk a bit about the historical, at least from what's been used in the Department of Veterans Affairs. So the first patient registry, the listing of patients with spinal cord conditions that was established, it was in the mid-1990s, and the VA called it the Spinal Cord Disorders Registry, which right there shows you it wasn't just injury, but it was other conditions and other disorders, the non-traumatic ones. And I'm not quite sure how they came up with the list of categories. I think they looked at the patients that were receiving care at the SCI centers and looked through some textbooks and decided. So the biggest categories, as far as what's most common, degenerative spine diseases, spinal tumors, which could be benign or malignant, infections, and vascular causes. And we know that currently between those things, the degenerative spine makes up about 60% or a little more of the patients on the registry, and then 10% each for tumors, infections, and vascular. Then there were a whole bunch of less common conditions where there was a category for it. So inflammation within the spinal cord, genetic disorders, metabolic diseases, radiation and toxins, and a couple other things. And that classification actually still persists in the current VA registry, which is about our fourth version at this point. Since that time, there's been some international effort to come up with a more complicated classification system. I'll turn it over to Dr. Reeves to share some details about that.
Thanks so much. And again, it's really an honor to be here. Along this topic, one of the things I wanted just to give a shout out to, in addition to what Alex has said earlier, is the leadership that Dr. Forber Pratt has shown at a national level as the director of the National Institute of Disability Independent Living and Rehabilitation Research, who through her leadership has really helped move this whole area forward within the model systems program. And so the organization of a more complicated classification system for non-trauma related diseases of the spinal cord began probably in the mid-2000s with colleagues in Europe and colleagues in Australia, as well as a number of other people around the world, developing a multi-tiered system to try to capture and categorize conditions affecting the spinal cord. And that that classification system has now been around for about 8 to 10 years and has been implemented on some national levels. And so Canada has really led the way with implementing this across Canada. And we look forward to hearing about that. The classification system is not perfect. And as Dr. Burns mentioned, more uncommon conditions that are low frequency can be very difficult to categorize. And of course, the biggest disadvantage for low frequency conditions is they're very, very hard to study without a national system of centers collecting data in a systematic way so you can aggregate cases and understand outcomes and interventions. And so without non-traumatic spinal cord injury being part of the U.S. Model Systems Spinal Cord Injury Program, it's very difficult to get the case numbers to evaluate outcomes and evaluate interventions. And so although at my center, we might see 5 or 10 people over the course of 5 or 10 years, that's very difficult to study. But across 18 centers or 20 centers across the country, we can aggregate cases much more quickly, understand conditions, and intervene to help improve quality of life and outcomes.
Yeah, and as we look to the future, we can look at some examples. So, Kristen, if you would like to come in at this point and tell us a little bit about what we've learned from other areas that you've been involved in.
Sure, yeah, thank you. Happy to kind of bring the Canadian perspective. In Canada, we have an observational registry. So that's a registry that collects information about people with new spinal cord injuries. Similar to model systems, it started just with individuals with traumatic spinal cord injuries. And, you know, similar to what we've heard from others already, you know, the desire to start to include some standardized information that we collect for those with non-traumatic spinal cord injuries really came from our network, who really wanted to start to better understand the causes of non-traumatic spinal cord injury. Especially our rehab centers were seeing more and more patients with non-traumatic spinal cord injury being admitted. And then also, like Chiara was saying, really wanting to start to get a better understanding of those non-traumatic spinal cord injuries to be able to better support rehab processes of care for those individuals. So for us in Canada in 2020, we started collecting information on those with new non-traumatic spinal cord injuries, but because of the way our registry is set up, we started collecting that only on people who were attending our specialized inpatient rehab programs. That's kind of where our network was set up. And so through that, what we've done is aligned with those classifications of how to classify non-traumatic spinal cord injuries. So we aligned to that international classification. And we've collected that information, and we've learned that, you know, if looking to kind of our 2020 data, the numbers are quite high for those with non-trauma attending specialized inpatient rehab. We've got about 520 individuals with non-traumatic injuries versus about 745 traumatic. So our inpatient rehab centers are seeing a lot more of those types of patients. Having said that, a lot of the feedback from our community and our community therapists is still that, similar to the US, it sounds like access to being able to attend that specialized inpatient rehab is still quite a challenge for individuals with non-traumatic spinal cord injury. I think in Canada, we're hoping to learn more about how those people flow through the system. Again, it was kind of talked about earlier that you know, that journey looks a lot different for someone with a non-traumatic spinal cord injury just because of the way the injury happens. It can be slow over time, as opposed to someone with a sudden traumatic injury where there's a very defined kind of flow through the healthcare system and access to different facilities and trauma centers and specialized rehab. So we're still learning a lot and really looking to use the information that we have and start to combine it with some of our other Canadian Institute of Health information data to get a better idea of the incidence and the prevalence and kind of really start to understand what that journey looks like for people who have these non-traumatic spinal cord injuries to be able to try and look at improving care.
Great. And we know that the podcast has a quite international listenership. And what would you say if someone recently diagnosed with non-traumatic injury or living with non-traumatic injury for some time, some coming changes that they might expect with this being the time for non-traumatic to be getting a little bit different attention?
So some of the kind of upcoming things within our group are looking to streamline kind of our recommendations for tracking data. Obviously, part of the reason for this podcast and some of our upcoming education pieces. Another thing is the model systems are starting to track some of this information. So if you do have access to a model system or have not previously had access to a model system and now do, you're more likely to be able to kind of be looped in into existing projects or within this existing study. The other piece is that there's coming down the pipeline more recommendations for use of the typical classification system for classifying spinal cord injuries, like the INSCI exam is what we'll call it, but some people historically call it the ASIA exam, and more recommendations for what that use looks like in this population. So if you are linked up with a spinal cord doc, a physiatrist, and you have access to that, or you have access to a model system center or a center that completes any research related to spinal cord injury, and even if they've shut the door in the past, I recommend you go back and try again, because it's definitely something like Alex had said, the funding is starting to increase for this population in particular. So we don't want anyone to have any doors closed, and all of us within our ASIA group and within this panel today are all more than willing to connect anybody with the right resources as needed as well. And so places like United Spinal, the Model Systems Knowledge Translation Center, these are still, although I did refer to these things as more targeted towards the traumatic SCI population, they still have great resources, right? And they are resources that are applicable for this population. The Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, right? All of these places are wonderful wealth of resources for all individuals with spinal cord injury, not specifically just traumatic SCI.
So one of the most important things, I think, for anyone who is experiencing a health condition that they don't understand and their health team is having trouble understanding, is the tremendous value that can come from getting a second opinion at a different center or perhaps somewhere more specialized. And it certainly can be very, very inconvenient to travel long distances. It can be difficult to get appointments as well. But it also can be very, very eye-opening to get a different, fresh perspective on things. And there is some evidence that suggests for some of these rare conditions that affect the spinal cord, the rate of diagnosis revision can be as high as 75%. So 3/4 of people will have a diagnosis that gets changed to something else. And in many instances, the new diagnosis is the one that comes with important treatment ramifications. And so if people are feeling like they're not making progress or they're kind of stuck somewhere, traveling to the larger urban center and getting a different perspective is really can be so, so important and so helpful. And I just want to encourage anyone listening to the podcast to reach out to the center of excellence in their region. You don't necessarily have to fly across the country. There are lots and lots of excellent medical centers all around, but that second opinion can be really, really important. One of the other things I think we can look forward to as additional centers focus on this patient population is the ability to aggregate together cases and produce publications to help us understand the lived experience and the outcomes, especially of the low frequency conditions. So things, for example, like inflammation affecting the spinal cord, conditions where for perhaps nutrition, like a B12 deficiency has affected the spinal cord. Right now, most of those publications all come from single center experience, and there aren't very many aggregating together cases from multiple different centers. And so that will improve our understanding of outcomes and interventions. And so we look forward to that, especially perhaps over the next 5 to 10 years. I'm hoping our colleagues in Canada will be able to publish more of their data since they're a bit ahead of us in collecting it from a nationwide perspective. As Dr. Burns has mentioned, you know, conditions such as arthritis and stenosis are most common. And so those are relatively easy to study, making up 30 to 40% of cases in many of the large series. But other things are so rare that they're very infrequent. And we might only see one or two at our center every few years. And so that makes things very hard to study some of these low frequency conditions.
So dear listeners, if that applies to you or someone you know, let them know. Your time is coming. And as Kiara said, if in the past there was a different response, reach out, because now you might get a different kind of a response from your team. Exciting times, right, Marla?
That's right. I think we've successfully turned this into a very uplifting episode. And this is such a great topic and a lot of news to be coming out of Asia. And thank you all so much for being here. We'd like to just thank and acknowledge all the panel members for their participation today. And if anyone would like to learn more about our panel members, please stay tuned. We'll give their bios here at the end. But thank you all for being here. And we can't wait to see what more work comes out from all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We would like to thank and acknowledge our panel members for their participation in today's episode. Today's panel members included: Alexandra Benoweth is a steering committee co-chair and member of multiple coalitions and committees, including the Academy of Spinal Cord Injury Professionals Advocacy Committee, the American Spinal Injury Association's Outreach Committee, the Independence Through the Enhancement of Medicare and Medicaid Coalition, the Coalition to Preserve Rehabilitation, as well as the Multiple Sclerosis Coalition. Ms. Benoweth has also been a guest lecturer and project director for American University's Master of Public Policy Practicum on Spinal Cord Injury Healthcare and Access, as well as a principal investigator of multiple subgrantee projects in urology research, as well as an advisor to various academic institutions on healthcare disparities access. Ms. Benoweth has over 25 years of government affairs and public affairs experience. She has a Bachelor of Arts from Brandeis University and a Master of Public Administration from American University.
Proceeding in alphabetical order by last name, Dr. Stephen Burns is a physiatrist who served as the Director of Spinal Cord Injury Services at the Veterans Affairs Puget Sound and is a professor in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. He is a member and past chair of the American Spinal Injury Association's International Standards Committee, and he participated in the development of the SCI patient registry currently used by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Kira McNair has practiced occupational therapy for over 13 years, primarily working in the inpatient rehabilitation setting with a specialization in assistive technology and non-traumatic spinal cord injury. Ms. McNair currently serves as clinical faculty within the Rutgers University Occupational Therapy Doctorate Program and an advanced clinical specialist and occupational therapist at Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation, in addition to pursuing a PhD in health sciences. Ms. McNair is an active member of the Asia Education Committee and leads the non-traumatic SCI subcommittee. She is also an active member of the American Congress of Rehabilitation Medicine, SCI-ISIG, and serves as the non-traumatic SCI task force lead. Ms. McNair's scholarship includes best practices in inpatient cancer rehabilitation, predicting prognosis for individuals with neoplastic-related SCI, as well as identifying factors related to acute care transfer and mortality for individuals with cancer admitted to inpatient rehabilitation. Her current research includes development and implementation of community-based programs for young adults with SCI.
Dr. Ron Reeves is an associate professor of PM&R, physical medicine and rehabilitation, at Mayo Clinic College of Medicine in Rochester, Minnesota. He has been active with several Asia committees and served the board of the directors from 2013 to 2019. Due to large subspecialized clinical practice at Mayo Clinic, non-traumatic spinal cord conditions outnumber traumatic spinal cord injuries by a factor of 2 to 3 to 1 in his practice. This large volume of patients has allowed Dr. Reeves and colleagues to explore outcomes related to non-traumatic spinal cord disorders, as you heard in today's episode, including those for rare disorders such as fibrocartilaginous embolic myelopathy, epidural lipomatosis, vascular myelopathy, and viral myelitis, for example.
Kristen Walden is currently the Associate Director of Clinical Programs for the Praxis Spinal Cord Institute and a physiotherapist at Vancouver Coastal Health in Vancouver, BC, Canada. The focus of her research involvement and clinical practice has been in the area of spinal cord injury. Clinically, she has practiced in the area of SCI for over 20 years, working with individuals in intensive care, acute care, as well as both inpatient and outpatient rehabilitation settings. In her role at Praxis, Kristen works on a number of research and best practice initiatives, including the development and implementation of the Standing and Walking Assessment Tool, the Rick Hansen Spinal Cord Injury Registry, and the Canadian Activity-Based Therapy Community of Practice. Additionally, she leads a Praxis collaboration with ISCOS on the development of the freely available web-based International Standards for Neurologic Classification of SCI algorithm, and is a member of the American Spinal Cord Injury Association's International Standards Committee.
And just as a reminder to our listeners for this special panel, both episodes will be published, The Scholarly and the Community, and you are invited to engage with both of these conversations. Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The topic of this episode was suggested to us by Asia's Education Committee. The podcast is made possible by the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh, your producer hosts, myself, Marla Petrello, our editor, Abby Fox, production assistant, James, and Asia's front office. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please contact us at sciperspectivespodcast@gmail.com.